And judiciary come to order. Today is February 4th. I'll remind everybody to please turn your cell phones and Blackberries and things off because even in the vibrating mode, they upset the sound system. The first item on the agenda, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2173. Ms. Civil, could you give us an explanation, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2173 narrows the class of offenders eligible for relief from the reporting requirements to only persons with no more than one conviction. This is relating to a bill that came through last time and was passed. It was House Bill 2333. And this addresses the language at the end of the statute that discusses, you have your SMSs in front of you. It's talking about the difference between an incident that occurs and a conviction that occurs when you don't have a previous conviction on your record, and then the possibility of gaining relief if you have more than one conviction. And I think I said it more plainly in your SMSs, so I'd be happy to answer any questions after the witnesses speak.
Okay. Ms. Beatty. Yeah. You still have to identify yourself, even though they should know you by now.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Vi Beatty. I am the Oregon State Sex Offender Registry Manager with Oregon State, and I'm Oregon State Police, excuse me. I'm here to testify in support of the bill, and I've also been authorized to express the support of the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police as well as the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors and the Sex Offender Supervisory Network. In House Bill 2173, what we're actually trying to do is clarify what the legislative intent was regarding this particular piece of legislation. What we're seeing and what has been expressed by separate courts is that in certain counties, if I'm a registered offender and I'm convicted of Rate 3 and contributing, but I meet all the other criteria, then, some courts will say that I can be relieved of my requirement to register. In other counties, we have courts interpreting it differently, saying that, no, I cannot be relieved of my requirement to register. When we originally drafted the legislative concept, it was almost a year ago, and we were operating under the assumption that the intent was one conviction. We've heard information that is possibly not the actual intent of this. So we're seeking more clarification so that the courts can administer this particular statute across the board in a standardized fashion.
As I recall, this case came out of, there was a young man who was 18, and he was a senior, and he had sex with a freshman who was, I think, 14, and he would be required to register for life. He was convicted of that as a sex offender, and we felt that somebody who did that the first time, it could have more than one incident, I guess. But anyway, so in that particular case, they had broken up, and the girl wanted to get back together, and he didn't. So she reported to the school, and so he gets convicted. We didn't want a person like that to have to register as a sex offender for life. If they continue committing sexual crimes, then they could be. But we're trying to help somebody on a one-time basis here. That's as I recall it.
And the person still has to do the crime. Has to do
right.
Punishment.
It's still a crime, but they just don't have to register as a sex offender. Sure. Representative Krieger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I can remember having a half an hour conversation by a guy named Rucker, who I trained when he was in Gold Beach as a recruit. He thought this was the greatest bill there ever was. Now I see the department coming back, and I understand why you're coming back, but I would be very disappointed if the District Attorney's Association is trying to circumvent the intent of this body by double charging so these people don't have relief. That's what we need to fix. And we will fix it.
Mr. Prinz.
Thank you. Chair Barker, members of the committee, thank you. I just wanted to I think what by saying, and I, Wayne, I know I represent Krieger, I know this goes back to last session. I think the clarification is right now it says one conviction. That's what OSP's changed it to. I think the clarification we need is, are we talking about one offense? Because I think the thing that OSP wants to clarify is, what if the kid that the 18-year-old, you know, there's multiple crimes that were committed there, possibly. You could have a contributing to delinquency of a minor and a rape three. So he could have two convictions. So if the way we clarify it, if you want to, is we wouldn't have to rely on how it was disposed of. We would say have one offense.
Arising out of a single act.
Yeah, and so counsel and we can work with Josh Nasby. If that's what you want, that's what we can get. And I think it would be clearer than what we've got in bold right now.
Yeah.
So that...
Then we got the other part of it, Mr. Chair, to deal with as far as the other scenario. That's here because you got two different tracks there that you're looking at.
And if,
but I mean, I think that wouldn't that answer the question if they say one incident?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would also, and just to further make sure we think through this, and that would be not as broad as say one victim, because you have that issue of multiple offenses with a single victim. What we're talking about is you've been convicted beyond reasonable doubt of one, I think, if I remember from law school, one actus reus, one act, one offense. That offense, you get one offense, and then, of course, you're convicted to follow up Representative Wisnant's comment, but and you're due your sentence, but if it's only one offense, you could seek relief. That's what you want. Is that what you want? Because I think that's what I hear you saying.
Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe it's a question for you, maybe it's a question for those who were here last time, but was it the intention that that this relief not be made available to somebody who might have a series of the same type of offense over a short period of time? Was it really the intention to limit it to just a single offense?
Mr. Chair, I can explain that a little bit, and we talked about it just a minute ago. If it's under 3 years, they can have sex every day. There's something wrong with that, because the next day is 3 years and a day.
I see.
And all of a sudden, this guy, he can't get a job. He can't get an education. He can't get housing. So I think the courts and the district attorneys are the ones that when they decide how they're going to prosecute this and how they're going to charge him, have got to use some wisdom. And there's a little thing called justice should be in the system. That needs to come to the top. Sometimes it doesn't.
And it was intended to allow somebody, a young person, to seek relief, not somebody who's acting out a lot of criminal activity. It's for somebody, it was for an 18-year-old that had sex with a senior that had sex with a freshman, and then would have to register as a sex offender for life. We said he shouldn't have to register.
But based on the proposed amendment, if I may.
Yes, please.
Heard, it sounds like this protection would not exist for somebody who, even in the span of 24 hours, committed this offense more than once.
Right.
Maybe. I mean, we're...
I think that would be a problem, if that's how I'm reading.
Representative Shields had a question.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's what I was getting at, is if somebody has a relationship, a statutory sexual offense relationship because of the age of one of the participants, and they have... sex five times, is that five offenses?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shields, I think that's what we're getting at. You know, there's three different ways we can go back to LC and have them write this. One victim, one instance, one conviction. I think you all have walked through the... if you say one conviction, you could have one act, multiple convictions. I hear you talking about the differences between the first two. Do you? And I just need to know, to work with Vi and Shannon and Josh Nasby, do you want it one victim or one instance? And, you know, I think you got the fellas that really worked on this last session. So, and then I just to what Representative Krieger's talking about, I just for the record is, of course, if the there's an age, there's a, you know, there's a lack of consent due to age in the criminal code. But there's an exception to that if the two are within 3 years. That's not a crime for many of these offenses. So that's what... So we're talking about those who are outside of the 3 years. It's more than 3 years. And the issue is, sounds like we got to boil down to, do you want me to, do you want us to write it as one victim or one instance?
When we talked about this last time, we talked about the one victim. If somebody's committing a series of these, then maybe they do need to be registered as a sex offender. If you have an 18-year-old that's playing with the young.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, thank you. It's my I remember that this guy, they'd had a they'd been boyfriend girlfriend, but they went to the senior thing and it happened, you know, had sex one time, and that's what we're saying. He shouldn't have to be burdened with that. I would submit to the committee and to the people testifying that if it's an ongoing relationship, then that's a different situation, and it should be, you know, the person should have known. This is just a slip. You know, you made a mistake at a certain event and probably was alcohol involved. I don't know. But so that was, I think, that's what I remember as intent.
Mr. Chair, I think we did pretty well limit it to that, but that really didn't get into the conversation as deeply as we could have about a young man and woman who had a relationship over a period of a year or two, and then all of a sudden over, you know, a short period of time, let's say there was a relationship two or three times, all, you know, a violation because of the age, where we wanted to go with it. I don't think we really got down into that.
As I recall, we did it with the one victim, because I remember that it's slightly different, that they'd had an ongoing relationship. The mother found out, told him to stop, and then when the boy stopped, the girl reported it.
Okay.
But anyway, I may be wrong. I've been wrong once before, I know. But what I think what I would like to see us move, if it's the will of the committee, is it would be the one victim. And so if they had their boyfriend, girlfriend in 6 months or something, multiple times, it's still one victim. He doesn't have to register. If he's having, if it's somebody who's predatory towards young girls, then they need to be registered.
That makes a lot of sense. And I reminded people as I talked to them when we talked about it here, how many men in this building would be in violation? Don't smile, but there'd be plenty. That's a natural thing that can happen. And as adults, we need to guide these people, but don't put them in a penalty box for the rest of their life.
Representative Shields.
Mr. Prince, I was just wondering, you know, we're talking about the reporting requirement for life. In a situation like Representative Krieger's describing, can we talk about, do you know, as a former DA, what the sentence was for that kind of offense?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shields, the sentence, so you look at these crimes, go through them. I didn't bring my grid, I should have. But this is what's interesting about these sex offenses. I think for a first-time offender, rape 3 is a C felony. Shannon, I can't remember what it's ranked. I think it's a 6,
seven,
I think, 6 or 7.
Yeah. I think it's presumptive probation.
I think it's. Yeah. Here's what's interesting is, in law, the registration and the duty to register is not a penalty. It's administrative. And the way we look at it with ex post facto issues constitutionally, it's not a penalty. But the reality is, people who have practice in this area, the registration is actually a lot of times the thing that is the biggest burden for the rest of the person's, you know, as they go forward. So, because the sentence is probably going to be probation in some of these. Sex abuse in the third degree is a Class A misdemeanor, so it can't go to prison. The maximum is 12 months. Contributing to the sexual delinquency of a minor is a Class A misdemeanor. And then, of course, the attempts. So many of these are things that as we've gone through registration, it shows kind of some of the decision points. We went with registering some of these, and to answer your question, I think that's in this issue you're dealing with is actually the more burdensome than the sentence imposed.
Thanks.
Further discussion?
Just briefly, because it came up last time and people kind of hee-hawed, but it's always the young man that's held accountable. Maybe he has, in our society, a greater responsibility. But in an incident we had in Gold Beach, we had a girl got involved with three of them, and they're all in the state pen, and you and I are paying it. I think the second time around she gives permission, and she can't legally do it. She needs to be held accountable. And I have four daughters, by the way.
Okay, well, Mr. Prince, what we'd ask then is that you get that clarified for us. So it's the one victim.
One victim.
And
we'll get that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, and Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would hope that we would hear from the group that proposed this legislation last session before this.
We do have Ms. Myers here today.
Okay, but I thought the governor's task, didn't he have a task force or something?
Yeah, I think that's where it came from.
Yeah. Well, Nick was there.
I think you're sitting next to
him. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, but it was a grandmother that came in here with her.
Right.
Son or mother and her son, and explained it very well.
Okay.
My memory, Mr. Chair, Representative, Vice Chair, it was, I think it was a committee bill that we worked on over the interim and put in as a committee bill.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Beatty. Ms. Meyer, did you want to testify? And you heard the fix we're shooting for. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Barker, and members of the committee. I don't think
identify
I have...
Identify yourself, please.
Oh, thank you. Gail Meyer, on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Attorneys. As so clarified by the committee, I don't think I do have any comments. I understand the committee to say that they don't want to limit it to simply one conviction, but to simply one victim during the course of an episode.
Yes.
As understood, we have no objections, no comment. We'd be happy to work with them on that.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2173 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2174. Ms. Civil.
House Bill 2174 simply requires an offender to send a copy of their order of relief to the Department of State Police so that the Department Sex Offender Registration Unit and police officers actually working in the community are appraised of the fact that the person's been relieved of reporting requirement. It basically will streamline the system. And we are ready to work this bill. It has no expenditure or revenue.
Hey, Ms. Beatty, please.
Members of the committee, as counsel stated, excuse me, currently under ORS 181832, which is relief upon conviction, and it flows with the last particular bill as well, but under current legislation, a person who is relieved upon conviction for certain crimes of their requirement to register does not have to notify the registry that they've been so relieved. What's happening then is they're stopped by local law enforcement, a criminal history check is run as standard procedure, they see a registrable sex crime on their record, they call the registry and say, is this person required to register? We then have to contact the courts, obtain court documents, go through the Oregon Justice Information Network to see if we can find a requirement or a relief of their requirement to register. If the person upon sentencing with the relief in that sentencing order sent us a copy, then we would have that information. So when law enforcement calls in, we can streamline it, say, yes, the person is relieved, we're done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't object to it, but it would seem that if the courts are the ones that are giving the relief, why don't they just notify the police? Especially with the new e-filing that's coming on, it would be much more convenient. They've got the documents and no copies have to be made.
Chair Barker, Representative Krieger. I talked to the Judicial Department about this, and they felt that there would be a fiscal impact if the courts had to make those copies and send them. Since all of our relief orders currently require the registrant to notify the state police registry, they felt for a low fiscal impact, if they just made it the responsibility of the offender, then that would take care of the issue.
Well, then that's fine, but then we want to make sure that the person who's getting relief granted understands that it really isn't effective until they file these papers. It's got to be some kind of a notice so they really know.
Yes.
Actually, what occurs when a person is relieved, usually we at the registry get a phone call from either their attorney or the offender themselves saying, I have a relief order. What we tell them is, because they have that order, they cannot be convicted of a failed to register charge at that point. We ask them to keep it on their person, so if they are stopped, then officers do know that they have been relieved. But to send us, you know, the certified copy so that we can remove them from the registry, get their name out of the law enforcement data system. It's mostly administrative, but I don't know of anyone who has been arrested for, not arrested, but who has been convicted of a failed to register charge after having been relieved.
Okay. And if I'm understanding this right, then, so if I'm to register, I get this. If I don't notify you and I get stopped, it's going to just probably be a hassle to me.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And not, and I mean, if, as long as you know, then it can just zip it right out and know that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Derek?
Yes.
Just to serve as a response to Representative Krieger, I'd offer two things. First of all, any criminal defense attorney worth their salt is going to be sure that their client knows exactly what to do and will perfect actually the filing process. That I can't imagine that wouldn't happen. And secondly, I think frankly it puts it does put back on the person who was the registrant that responsibility, which is, I think, where they're the ones seeking relief, so it just sort of perfects that process of getting relief, and I think that's an appropriate place to have the responsibility.
Okay, thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2174 and open a work session on House Bill 2174. Is there any further discussion on that? Speaker, I'd take a motion to move that bill to the floor with the defense.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2174 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Krieger has moved House Bill 2174 to the floor with the due pass. Is there any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Siegler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Representative Krieger, would you carry that?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. 2174 is passed. Open a public hearing, and we will not be working this, so open a public hearing on House Bill 2175. Ms. Sybil.
Finally, House Bill 2175 again relates to the Walsh Act in bringing Oregon into partial compliance. It's going to broaden the class of non-Oregon convictions that are now offenders that are now required to report in Oregon. And as I noted in the SMS, currently if you are convicted in another state and you're not placed on supervision in that state, you are not required to register in Oregon. That would most likely change under Walsh. This brings us into partial compliance with Walsh. It also has the effect of defining the jurisdiction again to bring us into compliance with Walsh to include the federal courts, military courts, tribal courts, et cetera.
Okay, Ms. Beatty.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Vi Beatty. I am the Oregon State Sex Offender Registry Manager with Oregon State Police here in support of this bill. And I also have authority to express the support of the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police, the Community Corrections Directors, as well as SOSN. As Council mentioned, the first piece that this bill does is it broadens the definition, or it actually defines under Oregon statute what a jurisdiction is. It does use the same language as the Adam Walsh Act so that we are compliant with that particular piece. The second thing this does is, and I'm going to use myself again as an example, if I'm in Oregon, I am an Oregon resident. I'm not required to register. I go to Nevada on vacation, and I commit sex abuse in the third degree under Nevada law. I am convicted of the crime. I do 60 days in jail. I pay a fine, and they allow me to walk. I'm not under supervision. I come back to Oregon. Under the three statutes that currently require registration for an act from another jurisdiction that equates to an Oregon crime, I am not required to register as an Oregon resident. What this does is it closes that loophole. So if I'm convicted as an Oregon resident in another state or jurisdiction for a crime that would equal a sex crime in Oregon, I am required to register in Oregon now.
Any questions? So what goes on in Las Vegas doesn't necessarily stay in Las Vegas.
Very good. In a bird.
Yeah. Okay. And I spoke with somebody else, and they were concerned about some juvenile issues in that, and I would hope you'd be able to work with them to, if their amendments are needed before this comes back for a work session, to figure that out. There was some question about some juvenile law that might not overlay just quite right, but they didn't know yet. They just learned of the bill. Further questions? Discussion? Okay. Thank you. Close the hearing on House Bill 2175. Further business? None. Adjourned.
Another successful
day. Not April. This won't be going quite that fast.